because I was one of the first chunk of people that actually ordered a Raspberry Pi. And so I have one that has the 256 megabytes RAM, so it's the first series that is not even that is no longer sold. And I had it lying around something like 4 months or so, and didn't know what to use, what to do with it. So, and after a while, I actually decided to give Asterisk another try. I'm using Asterisk now since something like think 99 or 2000s, and it really matured and is really a really nice phone box software, public branch exchange software that can do anything that you know or can imagine with phone lines. So what this presentation will cover is actually will not dig too much into code, although it covers code. For those people that love code, it has code. For those people that like pictures, I have a lot of pictures in there. So we'll cover a quick configuration. Just the first question, who of you have used Asterisk already? Please raise your hand. Oh, that's quite a lot. Yeah. And I'll also talk about why everybody that runs a website with PHP also needs Asterisk, and why it's important for you if you run an online shop or an open source project or whatsoever, you should also have phone services. We'll cover that. And I think the cookie is at the end. I have three slides about security and what you could do but should not do with Asterisk, and how you can easily hack anyone's credit card in, let's say, 3:30. Yeah, because and we'll talk about security and how phone systems play into security and what the human part of it is. So I think we even got the late arrivals now, so let's kick it off. This is, by the way, I also run a website where I do have some Asterisk tutorials in German, but that's I'll share the URL at the end. This is just a simple Asterisk configuration for those people that have never used Asterisk. Those of you that use Asterisk will be very familiar with this, and it's pretty basic. And you might even find some configuration issues here. But my configuration is that I have the Raspberry Pi, three soft phones on Android phones, a hard phone that is connected through an ATA adapter. But this basic example just shows you that you have the zip.conf file, where you just have all your zip peers, some general configuration, and your zip providers. So everything that is connected to the box through zip is actually configured here. Yeah. The dial plan is actually the configuration file that defines how all peers connected to the system can interact with it, and what happens when they dial certain numbers, and the system will do. Yeah. And the zip trunk is actually also in the zip configuration file. It is generally just configuring my localphone.com zip account. Yeah, you could use ZipGate or any other zip provider. And these are the three main configuration files that we'll use. There's a good book about Asterisk, and it's free as well. I think I have it at the end. So I highly encourage you to read that one. And this will just give you a basic Asterisk configuration where the soft phones can call each other and also make outbound calls if you configure your outgoing connection, and also accept incoming calls from the zip trunk. Yeah. I have used, on my Raspberry Pi, I used to have Raspbian, which is the Debian-based operating system, but at the moment I operate Arch Linux because it has a newer version of Asterisk. It actually runs a version 11 at the moment. So regardless of what distribution you use, it has good and stable versions of Asterisk. The only issue I have had with Raspbian from time to time is that it crashed my SD card because it used to run for something like 5 to 6 months without interruption. And I have the impression that Arch Linux is a bit more stable, running Asterisk and running long term on the Raspberry Pi. What you also have to do for ZIP, for those that are not familiar with it, you have to configure a firewall to actually forward UDP ports 10,000 to 20,000 and RTP, which also covers RTP and 50 port UDP port 5064 ZIP. Yeah. I do have an open WRT router, and this is how the configuration for that would look like. Yeah. This is just a basic setup, just to make you familiar when we talk about the configuration files, the zip conf, the extension conf, and these are basically the two files. Yeah. A little more things about what the advantages of Asterisk at home are, and how you can save money and not just in international calls. There are a lot of ZIP providers that provide you a free incoming German landline number, such as ZipGate provides you a free landline number. And Localphone, for example, charges 3.9 cents per minute to all German GSM networks, which if you go out and compare the prices at the mobile phone booth, it's pretty cheap. Yeah. The same for UK mobiles, because the reason I use it is because my brother lives in London and I travel frequently. So I installed the Raspberry Pi with Asterisk to actually be able to at least call my wife and call home. Because if you are in Qatar, for example, everybody knows where the country Qatar is. It's in the Middle East. And calls from hotel phones are very expensive. And if you use your box at home to just call you on the hotel phone and then connect you with anyone you want to talk, it's far, far cheaper than it is if you just use the hotel phone, which might sum up to something like 20, 30 euros. Yeah? And even from mobile to mobile, where you then have to, if you call both parties, you have to pay for both lines. With 7.8 cents, which is actually the sum of both connections, it's still cheaper than the 9 cents that the cheap providers have at the moment. Yeah? So, and there are a variety of other things that you can imagine. For example, my phone landline provider is a local cable company here. And they allow free calls to customer services if the call has been made from their landline. Yeah? But if you're out and you have an issue and you want to call them from your mobile, that's something like 50 cents. So if you connect your mobile and then the landline to call the customer service, it's actually free, or you just pay the 3 cents. So there are a lot of use cases, and even with the spread of mobile phone flat rates, there are lots of use cases, and we talk about other things than phone calls as well, just in a minute. Another thing is, if you mess with foreign companies a lot, and they all provide free landline numbers, so you can call their customer services for free, it doesn't help if you're in Germany and they are located in the US, because you will anyway pay the fee for the long distance call, while if you use ZIP or your Asterisk box or whatever, the call with most providers is free. Yeah. Also, least cost routing is possible, you know, which means that your box decides what is the cheapest provider to use for the number that has been entered. And this is one of the use cases as well. There is a simple call in the Asterisk console. You know, you can log into Asterisk and then you have an administration console where you can enter commands or use scripts that execute commands in there. The originate command allows you to connect either to extensions or a local extension with an application, for example. And this is really the command that I use the most, because this command actually just connects both of these numbers. So first it will call this number, which is actually Munich, and it will, but these are not real numbers, don't try to call them and don't know who's who's answering. And this is a British number. So this is the use case I use most, because it will first ring on this number and then ring on the second number. Another thing that you might not be that aware of that exists is DTMF, which is dual tone multi-frequency signaling. It's actually, if you do a phone call and you accidentally hit one of the numbers on the phone keyboard, then it will send a specific tone through the line for that number, which others might find annoying, but this is the technology that's being used for those annoying automatic phone systems that you know with call centers. It's been used for landline SMS. It's used for CLIP, calling line identification presentation, which is nothing else than the transferred number that you can see on the display. When someone calls you, on your landline phone, if you have ISDN or your landline provider supports CLIP, then you have the phone number. And this is actually the technology that's behind it. But if you look more into the technology, you see that it actually allows more than just the basic features, because with the ability to send text messages, you can send any data. You know, it's unencrypted. This is the warning message. But it uses the ETSI FSK standard in most of Europe for that technology. And with Asterisk, you can do some things where, you know, if we look at the organizational team here at the Frostcon, you see that every one of them has decked phones. And you can, with an ATA adapter or any adapter that you can connect to your Asterisk box, you can do things like this, where I configured the Raspberry Pi to, you know, if it realizes that the memory goes below a certain level, then it sends a text message to the phone informing about the fact that the memory is low. Another thing that I did, I think I have the code later on, is when someone calls my home phone number, I don't have all of the people in the local address book. And by the way, I think the local address book of this very basic Siemens phone allows something like 100 people or so, which is not much. So I have all the addresses stored in a small configuration file on the Raspberry Pi. And once someone calls in, the Raspberry Pi checks if it has the number in its local address book and then overrides the ETSI FSK data that it transmits to the phone. So or at least on this phone, allows a custom text of something like 2 lines of text. So you could easily have an address book, or sync your third-party address book, or sync all of your company details if you're using it in a corporate environment. And it allows a lot of things. And I will always suggest, if you use the Raspberry Pi or Asterisk with deck phones, you should allow people to send text messages as well, because it's a pretty nice feature. It allows to, you know, send short information without, you know, calling someone and reading the information with a text-to-speech engine or something like that. So, I think many of you have come because of the PHP part, maybe as well. This, by the way, is my configuration at home. Yeah, so I share some nice home phone pictures. Unfortunately, I neither have a dog nor a cat, so I can't share dog photos and cat photos. But I hope you're fine with those. This is my good old 30-euro decked phone. This is a Grandstream HD, I don't know what the number is, ATA adapter, where the phone is connected to this adapter. The adapter is connected to this TP-Link OpenWRT router via Ethernet and to the landline. And what actually happens if you dial a number, it always goes through the Raspberry Pi, which is here, and then connects back to the ATA adapter. Or if you dial an international number or a mobile phone number, it goes directly through ZIP. Yeah? Or depending what, if you If the phone calls the SMS service center number that is configured on the Raspberry Pi will just process the text, the SMS text message. One of the things it also does is if it receives an inbound text message from landline, I don't necessarily want that to appear on the landline phone because I'm almost never home, you know, I'm going to work, so I don't want the text messages on the landline phone, but it forwards them via email. So you see, there are lots of opportunities you can do, lots of things you can do with SMS, with calls, forwarding them, building small gateways with PHP to send emails and things like that. Before we go into the technical details, I also want to cover why you should not just should use it on the Raspberry Pi, but also if you have a website. Who of you runs a website? I would have expected everybody to raise their hand, but okay. A few things where Asterisk can really help you drive your business or improve your project or whatsoever, and it's even legally required. Before I start going into detail why you should use it, I did a small test. You know, the German Tagesschau, the evening news, you can stream them to your phone and you can actually listen to the news. The problem is that I commute from Siegburg, which is a local town nearby, to Frankfurt every day back and forth because I work in Frankfurt, and listening to news or checking out podcasts and things like that doesn't work because the connectivity of the 3G data network breaks all the time. And even the onboard train's hotspot doesn't work that well that you can actually stream audio. Yeah, but what does work is if you use the GSM network, it can continuously stream audio the full hour. And it, as my business phone has a landline and mobile flat rate, I can actually call the Raspberry Pi and ask for the news. Yeah, I wanted to show you that, but I think the mobile phone would just interfere with the microphone and we wouldn't be able to hear anything. But you can check out my website. Please don't do it all at the same time because I only have one inbound line. And, and it has a phone number and you can leave a message if you have an issue with the website, but you can also listen to the news because it's a menu there. So, but this shows you that phone services have a greater coverage in Europe and in the world probably than phones, than data services. Yeah. So, for example, if you have a facility in Bangalore, yeah, and Bangalore is very popular for having unstable internet connectivity, then phone networks might be more reliable. And if it's just to send a sales report or any reports from the machines, it's better to use the phone systems with DTMF to just transfer the data and process them by computers through the regular phone line than you trying to set up a huge data line with VPN and things like that, which is known to break often in those regions. So why should you as a website or web services provider have phone services as well? First thing is that local law, the so-called imprint in Germany where you need to show some legal information, it requires you to provide a phone number. Yeah? But if you publish a blog article like I do, which you know people might not like or whatever, or people have questions, like I publish tutorials, sometimes people call at 10 p.m. to ask for details how that works because they didn't understand it. You don't want them to call you at 10 p.m., you know, when you're in bed or have other stuff to do. This is where you can actually use the Asterisk box to have an answering machine or help services or whatsoever. Yeah. The second thing is that average users still consider the phone line as secure and reliable. Yeah? So if you have an issue and internet doesn't work, then most people refer to the phone and try to call someone. Yeah? Phone-based order completion is something because I also work in online sales and marketing, do some websites and things, both from the technical as well from the marketing side. It really helps some people, especially if you sell high-value goods or consulting services, they want to talk to someone and make sure, is it the product that I want, and things like that. So In your online shop, you can offer phone-based order completion services where someone says, OK, I either check out with PayPal or check out with credit card, or I just do the phone call, and then he's been called automatically. That works. You can do VIP customer services where you provide them additional phone numbers. They identify with PIN or customer numbers and things like that. Or you just identify them by their calling line, by their CLIP number. And you can offer generally the same services as you provide with your website. Let's say if you have an online shop and someone wants to know where is my order, you can either provide them a login or where he can enter the order details and he gets an order information and where the stuff is. But you could offer the same on the phone. So someone can call, enter the order number, and then get details on the phone, because that's often faster than it is to do it online, or people don't have a computer or don't want to use mobile internet, or you don't have a mobile website whatsoever. All the services, I would say, and that can be questioned, but I'd say every service that you have online, you can provide them on the phone. If it, let's say you're working in an open source project and you just received an SMS that the guy that has built the last 50 bucks just did a new commit and you want to recheck what he did, and you received an SMS, you could, call an address box and or send a text message and have it add a comment or things like that. Anything that you can remote control with web or any technology, you could also use SMS services or phone services. And there is text to speech available in Asterisk, which is it doesn't sound like you're talking to real people, but at least it allows you something. You can provide many of those services through Asterisk the same way that you provide it on your website. And some people might think that landlines are more secure and more reliable and might consider using the landline instead. So now finally you made it to the code. It's very simple. I wrote it, I think, in 3 minutes or so. And this is, it looks like being written in 3 minutes as well. This is nothing else than and we see the dial plan afterwards, but it receives the zip ID as a perimeter, then parses the phone number, opens my ETC address book file, which is nothing else than phone number is and the name I want to see, and then it actually creates a new zip ID and returns that zip ID. Pretty simple. The script is available on my site and I have checked it on in a repository you see later on. You can check it out if you like. But it's very simple. You could use a MySQL database. You could, build your own Oracle cluster if you have many friends and stuff like this. Yeah. Anything that you want, you could actually connect it. I received, there is a German website which is called telos.net, which actually allows reverse search for a large variety of numbers. So if someone calls, especially those service and cold call people, and I received an email from them because their API has recently been upgraded, you could also use that API to actually, for a number that you don't have, look it up and check who is this guy and actually change the text so you have real caller names for people that you have never talked to, or even for people that you don't want to talk to. Yeah. Or even important people that you don't know the number from, but you consider important, like your local tax advisor or whatsoever, and forward that to your phone number. We'll see the Asterisk dial plan. This is, I wouldn't say a complex dial plan, because it is, I think, an average dial plan. But let's take a look at it. The no-op comment is just a comment. So if I look into it, I know what this is. This is my dial plan for inbound calls from my landline provider. And the ATA adapter that we saw before transfers the CLIP information and the P-asserted identity zip header. So I have that in the header, capture the header, and then with shell I end the variable, I execute the PHP script, write the example into the new CID variable. Now, if you're not familiar with the Asterisk syntax, I highly encourage you to read the Asterisk book, because it really covers all of that. And then it checks if it's this number, because this is the SMS service center from Deutsche Telekom. So if you send a text message from any network to my landline phone, it's registered with this SMSC, and this number will call and then transfer the ETSI FSK data if Asterisk processes it. And it says, yeah, go to if it's this number, then it goes to inbound SMS, which is somewhere, should be somewhere down here. And then it jumps from here to there, yeah, and processes, it takes the SMS, and then it does a different call, because we have seen shell over here in an alternative system. System doesn't do anything than just execute the program, but it doesn't interrupt, or it doesn't, you know, the caller doesn't have to wait while this is being executed. Well, if you run your multi-oracle cluster here to check your 5 billion phone numbers that you have with your many friends, this will block the call. So someone will be waiting for the call acceptance while your system looks up the phone number. So you should try to speed up the script. For me, I mean, it's with PHP and such a small file, it's something milliseconds, no one, yeah?
How is the SMS information transferred to relay SMS?
Yeah, there is, in var spool, there's a directory where this command just stores the inbound text message. Yeah, and then this relay SMS script just looks up the folder, checks if there is a new SMS, relays it, and deletes it. Yeah. So this is where it gets the file from. If it's not an SMS, it just continues with some, you know, some here it sets the caller ID, so that will override what we see on the display once the call starts. Some denoise, because I have problems with the ATA adapter. Then calls my DECT phone, which is connected as DECT. And afterwards also locks the call, yeah? And into a separate log file, because the Asterisk log file is very big and it's not really, so I did a separate PHP script, log call, which just locks it to a different log file. So I can have a UI to check who called and which numbers I missed. Because if something like 20 people call in a week where I'm not at home, then the phone actually just stores the last three calls, but I want to see all calls. This is what Asterisk does here. And then after it's ready, it hangs up. This is basically the script. You know, you should really take time with those dial plans if you try it yourself, especially if you already have an inbound number, because a wrong dial plan can quickly crash or quickly exhaust your phone bill. You know, because if someone is, as soon as I activated port 5060, there were like, I think a day, 100 zip crawlers that tried to break into the system. You could use the firewall to just accept those packages from your zip provider. To make sure they don't break in. There is a fail to ban available for Asterisk as well. This is really a security, basic security thing. You know, it's an access method to the system, so you should make sure that you apply the same security mechanisms that you would apply to SSH. So click to call, oh, that's very dark, but that's just a console output. This is a small application that I run on my web server. My web server is located with Rackspace in London, and it runs just this user interface. On my, you can check out the code here if you want the complete code, but it's the presentation is shared afterwards, so you can check it out afterwards. But you can also just check out my website at the back, because I have all the links there. On the Raspberry Pi, there is a PHP script that just offers a RESTful API that just takes the phone numbers as perimeters, has a firewall clearance for the web server in London, so it connects to my local box, checks the phone number, is everything okay, what's that number, is this guy allowed to do the call, blah, blah, blah. And at the end, it just runs the Asterisk console and executes the originate command. At that point, I would have expected everybody to scream and shout, "Oh no!" But okay.
Let's hope you got your pseudo configuration right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have clear text passwords. it's 1234, and the username is user. No, yeah. I've got logging on my firewall machine because you know, if you take some time and look into all your system logs, you realize how many people actually are interested in your server. I would have expected other scream and shouting, because there is the Asterisk management interface as well, which is an API to Asterisk and allows the same things. Yeah. The reason why I didn't use the Asterisk management interface is because it doesn't work on a standard API like SOAP or just uses the HTTP protocol with the RESTful API. It works on basic TCP, and I would say it's a little complicated to operate, and as the Asterisk project, at least from my experience, is known for changing things frequently, you know, which is good because they fix a lot of things and there's a lot of new stuff. And all the stuff I had built for Asterisk, which version was it? I can't remember. It didn't work in version 11, so I had to change off the configuration and the scripts. But this works in 11. And I think this is the most stable thing to actually initiate calls. And if you make sure you have the proper system security, then this is quite helpful. And this application I actually use from hotel hotspots, yeah, to just enter the origin number and the destination number. If I tell you what authentication it uses, Facebook OAuth, open authentication with my Facebook account, because that was the fastest thing. It makes sure NSA captures all the information there, yeah, just to make aware they know who am I am calling, you know. That's the interface, and I've used it frequently, because if you are in hotel hotspots, you might not have access through the SSH port or any other connectivity, so a simple jQuery UI web interface does the job. And if you like, if you want to see the code of the interface and the mess I produced, check it out in the repository. Let's talk about web conferences. Because Asterisk allows you to do phone conferences, which is great. You can talk to other people, but that's not state of the art. You know, that everybody would have screamed, yeah, 1996, probably. What we want today is we want to share screens on numerous devices across networks. And we also want to use open source software for that, because otherwise we could just buy Microsoft Live Communication Server from don't know who's selling that, because Steve Ballmer is actually on long-term holiday now. This is actually the invitation to, yeah. We have the originate command as well, so it calls a local participant to invite him to the application ConfBridge number 7. ConfBridge was introduced in one of the last Asterisk versions and is a very fast and simple way to actually build up a conference room, because it's an Asterisk command that just takes a number of the conference room. Alternatively, it doesn't allow PIN identification, that you have to do on yourself. But if you want to have, for your own open source project or company or whatsoever, your own conference system, it's pretty simple, because you can just use the ConfBridge command and everybody can either dial in or you invite everybody. Yeah? Invite might be cheaper, you know, if it's all your staff. Invite might be cheaper because you're going through your zip provider, which has cheaper local rates than all the participants might have. What do we have here? I would have expected at this point another scream and shout, because JW Player isn't fully open source, and the RTMP protocol isn't fully open source. It's, you know, it's reverse engineered, and it's the protocol that's been used for Flash videos, for live streaming Flash videos. So if you ever try to download a live stream from a website, you might have had issues with RTMP protocol. The CRTMP server is one of those open source projects I don't like much, because it's half open source and all the stuff you need, they sell it extra. So, but it's one of the only RTMP servers that run on the Raspberry Pi at the moment, yeah, and is fast enough to really do that. Oh, here's the dial plan. Sorry, I oversaw that. So it does authenticate, allows you to, you know, do an authentication. So if someone dials, wants to go to room 7, dials the 7 in my service menu, then he has to enter pin 1234. As said, I have 1234 as password. And then comes into coverage bridge 7, number 8, and number 9. So you have some, if you say you run a company, you have your asterisk box, and you want some conference rooms as well, you can just use them. You know, and with the service menus, you can also use an incoming number to offer that pretty fast. This is the configuration file for the CRTMP server that generally, the name of my Raspberry Pi is Redbox because I have a red Raspberry Pi box around. That's why I call it Redbox. The flash configuration, yeah, that's a JW player configuration, and then it just FFmpeg streams it to the CRTMP server. And then if you run the website, like you see in the back, there's this computer on the left and my from a Windows machine on the right that just runs, I think, a web browser, it's Chrome with a Flash plugin and just streams the content from the other machine. Yeah. That's a good way, but what I don't really like with CRTMP server is the security. It's on one hand, it's not documented that well, so you find yourself digging through the code all the time to find out how that works. On the other hand, your clients have to be able to actually stream RTMP, which if you have an Android tablet or whatever device that doesn't support RTMP, it's not really the way to go. Yeah. Therefore, I have a second slide, screen sharing with FF server. Yeah. FF server is the server instance from FFmpeg. It allows you to stream any type of media to the server. It will convert it and then stream it back to your clients that want to stream it. One thing, unfortunately, at the moment, FF server doesn't allow copy, which is, you know, because if FF server has to recode the video stream on the Raspberry Pi, it's quite a job for the small device. Yeah. So copy would have been faster, but if you want to go big and have a huge server, then just recode whatever you want. This is the FFmpeg command with X11 grab, which just grabs your entire screen and then streams it to my FF server, which is to the input FFM file on port 8090. And then there is a flash file as well. You can use anything. You could use MPEG-4. You could use DivX, whatever FF server allows you. But I wanted to use a Flash player just because every online web conference system uses a Flash player. Yeah, there's no real reason behind it. And then it can stream it back, and you can also have some security. If you really want to have a web conferencing system like this, and you see this is an Android tablet that actually streams the content you see over there. Yeah. If you want to really have your own web conference system, go with FF server if you want to build it yourself. There are some other projects.
I want to ask, is there a nicer way to get the audio instead of just X11 web? For example, can in the FFmpeg some way connect directly to Asterisk?
To what?
To Asterisk.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's where we. It's not so good the way to use X11 web to get the audio from Asterisk. Yeah. Do I understand something wrong?
Yeah, yeah. No. It's just to grab your screen input. You know, the.
Yeah.
The.
But it works on the Asterisk.
No. Beside Asterisk, you run FF server on the box. So you have the video streaming and the phone line separately. So it's not, you're not transferring the audio because you, like many web conference systems like WebEx, you use the phone-based audio bridge to talk to the people. and the streaming, video streaming infrastructure to share your desktop. Yeah? So you don't have, there is no audio in here. Yeah, there's no audio in the stream. No audio, there it is. Yeah, it streams no audio because you have the phone bridge. Yeah, it's not, you can integrate that into Asterisk through scripts and interfaces, but generally these are two different things, you know. Because Asterisk allows you to run the conference, so you have a phone bridge conference, and you could, with the newest version, also do video streaming if you want. But if you really want to do it in the browser so everybody can join, like all the web conference, the reason I did it that way was I wanted to build something just with open source software that does the same job that all those $300 a month conferencing systems. Yeah, and I think this is, if you build some scripts, login screens, and something, you can also get your secretary to be able to use it, I think. Yeah. But that's the reason why I use both CRTMP server and FF server. And FF server, the advantage is clear, it's 100% open source and mobile compatible. And you can, I mean, it's very good. Web content over the phone. I didn't know I had that slide, but good to know. This is, we talked about the news before, and this is the script that actually downloads the podcast from Tagesschau and transfers it to the Asterisk directory. Because in the dial plan, I have the playback command that just says playback Nachrichten, which is German for news. And what this script does is it actually downloads it, then recodes it, then transfers it to the directory so Asterisk can play it. Yeah. The final section, yeah. I think we have 50 minutes left. We can cover some questions afterwards. Let's go talk about security and security of phone systems in general. I think if you're still brute forcing servers, then you haven't yet found one of the biggest holes in today's communication. Yeah, I like public blue screens, by the way. Yeah, this is Tel Aviv Airport. Things you could do, but maybe you should not do, and please don't try this at home, unless you know what you're really doing. What you could do is install Asterisk with an ATA adapter as a wiretap. For example, you can use the script, the dial plan, to identify whether anyone calls your wife at home and you want to know what they're talking about. You can also start ChanSpy, which is something where you can just listen to, you are being called and listen to the channel, and you can just listen. So it's a wiretap, or you just record the entire call, or you just buy yourself the biggest NAS and try to do NSA yourself. You can use anonymous credit cards to buy anonymous VoIP accounts. It's very popular because then no one knows who's using the VoIP account. Install a Raspberry Pi in a network and TCP dump all zip sessions because they're not encrypted. If you just TCP dump it and get the audio stream, you can easily listen to it. It's pretty simple to, you know, send spoof text messages and spoofing caller IDs. Text messages, we had the small tool SMSQ, which allows you to define the sender ID yourself, same with Asterisk. And many zip providers do not require you to verify your phone number, or you'd use a hotel phone number wherever you are. So you can use any caller ID. You know, I used to call a good friend of mine with a caller ID from the Bermudas, and he was always, he went crazy when he saw all the different caller IDs. You could also call, you know, use anyone, or call the secretary with the number of the boss or something like that. You know, it's all possible. And it even works through networks. Same for text messages. Yeah? Because the text messages are generally a call, and then the data is being transmitted. Yeah? Brute forcing DTMF to get access to secured systems, for example, mailboxes. You might be aware of, there was a case where, I think it was The Guardian as well, security services hacked mailboxes from mobile phones. In the past, until I would say 2004, that was a simple job because they all had 1234 as a standard password. No one changed it. Now they have different passwords, but brute forcing, like you brute force an SSH server works in the same way with DTMF, so you can also brute force a mailbox. You know? It's just more complex because you need to identify the positive and negative signals you get from the remote site in order to determine whether you cracked it in or not. This is one of the main things, calling call centers with spoof numbers and stolen identities. If you have ever called a call center because you wanted to do something, all they ask is, what's your address and what's your birth date? Details you can easily find on any social network of any 14-year-old teen. This is stealing identities and working with the victim's spoof number over the phone on call centers is a very, very simple way to steal an entire identity, to lock down credit cards, to lock down bank accounts, things like that. Because if you need to lock a bank account, all you need to do is you call a service number that has an automated system that expects your bank card ID and the account number via DTMF, and then the account is locked. So you can easily lock hundreds of people's accounts if you want. Please don't lock mine, I need it. Anonymous SIM cards are very popular and fake name registered ones. Because if you go into any grocery store, you today can buy SIM cards. There are several drivers for asterisks. Wanted to ask? No. Where you can also use 3G dongles for calls, like the Huawei E, I think 190 or so, that I own from O2. It's something like €20 with a SIM card. You don't need to register the SIM card, actually, and you can do phone calls right away and have an anonymous GSM gateway, but that's the next section. Extension scan phone number or phone ping across phone number ranges is also very interesting because if you want to know which phone numbers exist in a company, you can have your asterisk box just try them all. So if you want to know what the CEO of a certain company, what his phone number is, you just phone ping across the number ranges, but make sure you change your phone number from time to time. that's extension scan. Yeah, SMSC vulnerability. A landline phone has an SMSC configured to identify where to send the text messages to. But if it receives a text message from with the ETS IFSK modulation standard, it doesn't really check where the message comes from. So anyone can drop hundreds of text messages onto the device. So you can A, crash the device because you flood its memory, and you can also send any text messages. Fax DOS by bombing fax devices until their storage is full. That's a very simple thing because most of the fax devices can store something like 50 or 100 or I think 200 pages. These are large devices and have a storage for I think another 500 pages. That's a job of 3 hours and the device is full. So if you want to DOS a fax device, that's a very, very simple thing these days, especially with small companies. If you know or if an attacker knows that the competitor is receiving important information from something that the attacker wanted, then he just bombs all the fax devices overnight. So in the morning, there will be no phone DOS with call and hookup to keep remote lines busy. Simple job. Most people have one or two lines. That's something you can set. You can set up yourself 20 lines in 10 minutes, and then you can DOS any line. Most call centers operate at something like 20 to 30 lines. That's even doable with a Raspberry Pi still to lock down the call center. So if you would crack down their website, you could also crack down their call center immediately, and then the business is closed. As said, please don't try this at home. But if you run an asterisk or any phone system yourself, keep that in mind. Yeah? Because the CEO of Siemens will not answer if I call him with my mobile phone, because I will enter his secretary, no one knows. But if I use a different number of any other company or any of his employees, he might answer the phone. So three things that you should learn. Phone numbers. Let's do the questions afterwards. Yeah, phone numbers are not secure. Phone lines are not secure, and you cannot trust anything that comes through the phone network. Anonymous GSM gateways. Yeah? A very good thing is all you need to do, all you need to have is a 3G dongle, the Raspberry Pi, and a long-lasting battery, which is available for USB car batteries and stuff like that. Tutorials exist on the web. And then you can place the Raspberry Pi anywhere. It has an anonymous number, and you can accept inbound calls via GSM. You can manage the system via DTMF and SMS. You can route calls through the asterisk box. You can accept SMS via Twitter, for example, if you don't want to identify yourself on the box. And then you have a small hack box in the middle of nowhere that has a phone line. It's manageable through the phone network. You could also do some encryptions yourself. And you could have it do autonomous tasks from the things you should not do list we had before. That's most of the things is you build a box, you drop it somewhere, and then it does all the evil stuff. And if someone finds it, you don't care because no one knows what it is. And that's also, those attacks existed already, because if you have a hotspot, there were small boxes on sale that just needed a power outlet, captured all the Wi-Fi data, and then transmitted that. And this is generally everything that you need. It's like a classic internet bot, but instead of IRC, it uses DTMF. So because the problem is, if you have a bot, you need to administrate it. And most people just say, okay, build an IRC or whatsoever and administrate it over the internet. But it's far easier, no one will ever know that this GSM modem that is in there actually is run on this bot. So you could also administrate a bot over DTMF. So this is the evil stuff you can do. Anonymous call routing is something many people are afraid of. Their calls are being monitored. Yes, all their calls are being monitored, as we know these days. But you can make it a little harder for people to actually realize that it is your call by routing it through different asterisk boxes, because asterisk can work as a proxy server for phone calls as well. Because you call the box changes all the details and data and forwards you to the next box. So you can even have a huge chain of different asterisk boxes on different providers that connect you to different other providers through different countries, so that you have a chain of different asterisk boxes, and it's really hard to find out that Bob Evil called Ted Evil, because the phone call routed through different networks, through different providers, through different servers, and metadata can be transported in CLIP and ZIP ID, because that's insecure. I can write Bob Evil for myself into the CLIP identification, and chances are very good that the person I call will have Bob Evil on his phone, because it's just data. It's not being verified. SMS can be encrypted because it's text. You can run AES or whatever your favorite encryption algorithm. And you can improve the complication of the traceability of the call by mixing networks, not just using ZIP, but GSM. So that will be very hard to trace the call back, or even realize that Bob Evil called Ted Evil. Because if someone traces all the network data worldwide, maybe one organization that is capable of doing that, they have tons of different connections, but no direct connection from Bob to Ted Evil, because there are hundreds of different connections. Fake number calling a caller, that's the last slide, I think, because you have 5 minutes. A three-liner it is. Because what have I done here? Let me quickly check. This is SMSQ, the command that actually allows me from the asterisk console or from the Linux console directly to actually write send a text message to any extension that I have. I could also dial my parents' local phone number as an origin address. I just use the phone number from my dad and whatsoever, and make some fool out of my mom or whatsoever. I could also call my wife with some of her ex-boyfriend's phone numbers to make some fun out of it. Just to make you aware, the caller ID is not a security criteria. Okay, it's not, it's simply not, because anyone can change it, you know. Neither is authentication over the phone with a PIN number a strong security. Because if I link onto the channel with ChanceBuy, for example, I just record it and I can recover the DTMF tones that have been sent through. Yeah? So if you offer phone services, make sure you keep in mind that it is not secure. You shouldn't offer automated banking over it, over this. You know, it's, I think it is secure enough to give some anonymous information on where a package is or something, or very simple things, but it's not secure enough to do a credit card transaction, for example. And this is actually in a dial plan where you change the caller ID. Yeah. It's very simple. I just change it to a Berlin number, and depending on the provider, it will just use that number. With ZipGate, that will work. There is some red text down here which you can't read, but it's key vulnerabilities in phone networks. So caller ID is considered trustworthy, but is not. The phone landline networks by the general public are considered as secure and reliable, but they are not. Call centers use caller IDs for pre-identification. That means if you call a call center, and there are some companies that do that, that I'm aware of, and you use your phone number, they already greet you with your name because their computer already opened your the data set of the person from that caller ID. So if you want to lock the phone number, the credit card of your neighbor because his dog has done stuff to your garden, then you just use his phone number, call the credit card call center, and ask them to, you know, lock the credit card, and then he's with no credit card. Yeah, and use Ted and Bob Evil's method to make sure no one knows that it was you. People trust the information that are transferred to the public phone. Yeah, and this is, I think, we're at the end, and this is generally security part and what you can do with Asterisk, but what you should know. And thank you very much for listening. And this is, by the way, my website. Yeah. Yeah?
One question. Asterisk supports FIDB.
Here.
Is Asterisk supports FIDB at the moment? For secure transfer?
Yes, it does. I haven't tried it yet, but it does. But the problem is that's only within the us. You know, the entire chain has to support SRTP.
Yeah.
And if you call through landline networks, then that's for nothing. So
yeah, okay.
If you have company networks and you want to connect them to the internet, make sure you encrypt them. Yeah.
Just wondering if there's lights are available on the website.
Yes. Okay, whether the slides are available on the website, yes. They will be published by the Frostcon team after the conference, right?
Yes.
The slides, yes. But the information, more in-depth information, are available on my website as well. Yeah. Yes?
For the evil stuff, have you considered writing it up in an article at 2600? Because I'm sure that they would find it very interesting.
Yeah, maybe. I don't have too much time, and I mostly write articles, but maybe I will write an article about it. I'm just...
Actually, nothing new to this community, I think.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. So
yeah.
Everything is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
If you actually look at it, so it's not...
Yeah.
It's unusual for us here.
Yeah.
Not concerned too much with telephone and stuff, but if you're into that, that's
not
no real news.
Yeah, that's true. I prefer not to write too many security articles because you never know how many decades you will spend in jail. Yeah?
It's less a question, but I feared that another evil thing you can do with voice over IP is hear to the caller what he's saying before you get at the call.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Because you can record what's being said on the phone before you pick up the call. Because, for example, the phone realizes the pickup of the call by a certain tone that has been transferred on a specific frequency, and then it knows, okay, the call is initiated. But the line is already open at that moment, so asterisk can record from the beginning on. As soon as the call lands on the asterisk box and asterisk waits for the transfer, because with my ATA adapter, the call comes to the ATA adapter transfers directly to asterisk. Asterisk gives the tone that it now connects the peer, so you think it's not yet, there's no one on the other side, but asterisk can record already. Yep. Sorry?
Is it legal?
Oh, that you have to ask your local legal consultant. Yeah. Because this is like from a scientific perspective. So if you record the calls from your kids, that might be allowed. If you record the calls of all the nice girls in the student home, might not be legal. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, then. Thank you very much for coming in and listening.